You are tuned to listener-supported public radio, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. I'm Jenny Nyman, here to welcome you to Kenai Garden Talk, a show about everything you can grow, harvest, and raise on the central Kenai Peninsula. On this month's show, we'll take a walk on the wild side with local plants that can be used for medicinal purposes. We'll cozy up for fall with a different kind of fleece, and we'll check in on upcoming food and fiber events in the area. First, though, we'll sink our teeth into one of fall's favorite treats. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Kenai Garden Talk on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. I'm Jenny Nyman. There's not a much better taste of fall than a ripe, juicy apple. In Alaska, that experience has mostly come from grocery stores shipping in fall fruit from the lower 48 or beyond. Common wisdom is that we just don't have a climate that's conducive to growing those big, beautiful apples. Try telling that to Michael O'Brien of O'Brien Garden and Trees in Nikiski and the 50 or so people who visited his orchard September 3rd for the first of the season apple tasting.
We're having an apple tasting. Also, we've included four varieties of tart cherries, pie cherries. So this is our beginning apple tasting. So it includes just the summer apples. And later, in 3-4 weeks, we'll have fall apples, and then we'll move on to the winter apples. And that'll be our last tasting for the season. So today we're only testing 9 varieties, and this season we're late compared to usual. Last season was a very early season, and this year we're just on the other end of it. Generally, we'd have about 15 or so. So we just had to select, going through by the taste, what we have out here. The next tasting, we'll probably have about 30, maybe even more apples for that one, because most things come in on mid-season.
O'Brien grows hundreds of varieties of apples, which he's constantly testing and tweaking and eliminating to narrow in on the hardiest, tastiest varieties possible. High tunnels are a huge help as they extend the growing season and protect trees from the elements. But that's not his only strategy. He grows a lot of his trees out in the open air. O'Brien's real secret to success starts at the root.
My understanding is you do a lot of grafting to get kind of a hearty stock and flavor and
that's
other qualities.
Right. We started out years ago by doing a 10-year trial on rootstock. And then we would find out what was compatible with all of the different fruit. So with that, it has well paid off because, of course, without the right rootstock on, well, you're just wasting your time anyway. The tree's going to die.
Right.
So we generally graft 2,000, 3,000 trees a year, and we start in March. And so that gives us a real head start on the season at a time where we can't do much outdoors anyway. It's really moving along.
O'Brien has been in Alaska since 1949, so his fruit tree experience has been homegrown.
One thing led to another, starting with the small fruit. We always had a garden. That it just progressed, and it's always been the challenge for me. So, of course, one thing leads to another, and you have to keep moving up strawberries and then the raspberries and so on, and then the apples outside and now onto the other fruit.
Now, how has this year been? You mentioned some things being late, and obviously it's been pretty cold and pretty wet all year. Is that impacting productivity or just timeline for you?
Probably both. But the thing any grower, farmer knows is to be diversified.
Right.
Some things will still do fine. So if you're diversified, then something will pick up where you have had somewhat of a setback, failure, whatever it may be. And that's what we try to do. We have a lot of crops out there, strawberries, garlic, asparagus. So they pick up a lot of failures that we might have elsewhere. But actually, the high tunnels, I would say, are probably the most safe way to go. You're generally going to come through. They just, like this year, we're just later, and the size isn't quite what we had it seen last year.
The less than warm weather lately is making it challenging for scheduling his apple tastings. He doesn't have the next three on the books quite yet, because he doesn't know quite yet when his fall and winter apples will ripen.
3 to 4 weeks from today. Okay. And that just depends, again, on how the weather, if we were to get real sunny days, it would probably be 3 weeks. So unfortunately, we can't predict that, and we don't want to advertise it until we're sure. We want to put this fruit out at its prime, and we want people to be not only fair to the fruit itself, but to show people just what really can be done and how good it is.
The orchard sells apples by pre-order for now until more ripen, and it also sells trees that people can grow at home. The apple tastings give people a chance to sample for either purpose.
It's a good thing to do. A lot of people take side notes to just see what varieties that they want, if they want to store apples or if they want apples to buy, or better yet, to grow the trees for themselves. It's a wonderful thing if you have children, and mine were kind of maybe a little bit pushed into it, but it has paid off because all of them now just see how important it is and are using it in their lives and, of course, with their children. So kids are small. It'd be much healthier for the kids to be out there growing a tree, eating the fruit, than in playing some game in the house.
No extension cords required for the tree in the yard.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, this is really where it's at, and it's just really a rewarding experience working with this, because you can see it develop, and of course, not everything is a success, but what is outweighs the downfalls too. And we do classes in the spring of the year, so that would be a real prime opportunity for people to learn what we have to this point. Sure, not saying that I know everything, but I sure know by a lot of the mistakes that I've made and the quicker routes to get to where we're at now.
Are there any other types of fruit you'd like to experiment with in the future?
Yes, we'll probably pick up some grapes. Yeah, we'll probably do grapes. Maybe some kiwi testing. We had kiwis in the past, and the space we just didn't have available for them. But okay. So we'll try that again. Yeah, and anything else, we're actually growing pomegranates, but that's one of my son's experiments.
You just rolled your eyes on that
stretch. One. Yeah, that's a very long season, but hey, you know, if you don't try it, it never will happen.
Yeah.
So the best thing is to get out there, no matter what age you are. A lot of people think, well, I'm at this age and there just isn't time. Well, if that attitude, there isn't. You have to have a positive attitude, and you have to be able to, if something happens, you just bite the bullet and you keep plugging away. And I've been called a plugger many times, but sometimes that's what it takes.
O'Brien says people should come with an open mind about what's possible to grow in Alaska and a discerning palate about which varieties they like best.
All of this, it is working so well, and is such an advantage for the Alaskan people that are pretty much just fruit starved anyway. I mean, for fresh fruit, it's very difficult for them to ship it in fresh, right off of the tree. So that's what we're trying to do, is not only make the opportunity here for people to try all of the different varieties, but to show them that they could do it as well. And most people here, well, they haven't really tasted, especially to get to the younger kids, because they started school, and that's when the fruit is generally ripe elsewhere.
Yeah, if you grew up around here and all you knew of fruit is what you get, you know, at the grocery store that comes in bulk and is shipped not quite ripe yet, it's probably a whole different world than getting it right off a tree.
Yeah, and that is so true, because I thought plums were really an inferior fruit, because the plums, although they are beautiful, some are red flesh, whatever, they just do not have the flavor they should. Well, as soon as some of the plums hit the table, that's going to be a real eye-opener for a lot of people. They are the in my opinion, the most outstanding fruit that we're growing at this time. And it's just one of those things. I think we're going to find the same thing similar to the apricots and the peaches and nectarines. Peaches especially. You can't hardly ship a peach.
Well, in common knowledge, I think, was you can't hardly grow a peach on the Kenai Peninsula, and yet you figured out how.
Well, that's true. And here we do not even have electricity to this site. So everything is just all natural, just whatever the temperature is, it is. But there is so much difference in temperature from the inside of this high tunnel to outside. Right. So that's where the whole key was at. The other advantage we had, of course, was all our rootstock testing and our grafting ability through the years has greatly improved. We're not only testing the ones that have been proven in the past for other people, but all of, we're connected with all the universities and worldwide. So that is giving us the advantage because we've been in it for so long and do have connections. So it's a major plus for everybody, that's for sure.
Nicole and Darlene Sizemore of Kisilov attended the tasting. Here's Nicole.
We come every year, and it's delicious. We love to come and try the different varieties. She's looking to buy some trees for an orchard for their homestead, so getting an idea of what they want and what will grow well out there.
And these people always have so much knowledge that it's the way to go. You know, let you try everything. That way you're not buying something blind. You know what's going to grow well for your area because they'll tell you what's the best to put for the spot that you have and try to make it successful. So far, just enjoying it.
Do you have a favorite so far of something you've tried?
It's William's Pride.
William's Pride, probably, and the Katie. K-A-T-I, the first one on the
end. Zestar was my favorite last year. This Williams Pride is my new favorite. Well, I don't think I tried that one last year. I don't remember that name. I remember Zestar because I remember thinking that it was a really intense name for an apple. And then when I tasted it out of everyone else, I was like, oh my gosh, it's so good. But that Williams Pride almost tastes like cherries. It's so good.
Well, and they have cherries too, so.
And they're not as good as the cherries. That apple is better. And I'm always super excited to buy some goodies from them. Last year we got a bunch of jam and some honey.
I'll tell you though, this would be for what we want to do, jellies and jams and butters. The Williams Pride would be the perfect flavor. Yeah.
So. Sounds like that is going to be your winner.
New fave. Wait, new fave.
Yeah, you got a couple where you wrote new fave.
I like this one. Wait a minute. No, I like this one. No, I wrote my favorite and then new fave.
There weren't enough apples ripe to take home at the first tasting, but visitors didn't have to leave empty-handed. Holly O'Brien takes the crops and makes them into other products to sell.
My station is our product station, and so we have our pestos, our jams and jellies. We also have samples of the blackcurrant and gooseberry.
What's been the big seller so far today?
Pesto. It's pretty much one of our big ones. The jams have been going pretty consistently.
Yeah, you think apple orchard pesto is probably not the first thing that comes to mind.
Exactly. There's a lot of things that we do that probably wouldn't be considered apple orchard. We do tomatoes and we do all kinds of the varieties, the spicy varieties and stuff on our jams. And we actually have people that grow the peppers for us. So it's all locally grown product that goes in on our jams. So.
And where are you in your product season? I mean, it's got to be just about harvest time.
Yeah, we're doing all kinds of gathering. And basically here in the next couple of weeks, it'll be just apples and be putting the berries away for the jams and jellies. I do all of it, the making, start to finish. I come out, grab the berries that I need and take them home, process them that night.
That's got to be a much different scale than your home jelly maker, I would assume.
Yeah. There's weeks where it's 60-hour weeks easily getting it done, but it's fun. I enjoy it very much.
What size batches do you do?
Single to triple, not anything too crazy. Usually try to do 10 or 12 cases a week.
When is jelly making for you guys?
It starts basically at the beginning of the season, and lasts until well after the season's over.
And how was this year for growing? It seems kind of cold and late.
It was pretty late too, but we seem to have a pretty good one. We yielded quite a bit this year, so we're pretty happy about it.
And how's the event going so far today?
It's going great. People are happy, smiling, bringing their kids out. It's always a fun thing to do out here in Nikiski.
O'Brien Garden and Trees is on Frida Drive in Nikiski. They're open from noon to 5 p.m. Wednesdays through Saturdays. They sell all their products at the orchard and have some you-pick opportunities. To find out the dates for their next apple tastings, check out their page on Facebook. Up next, while apples are a good source of dietary fiber, you might want another kind of fiber to keep you warm in the fall weather. Stay tuned. This is Kenai Garden Talk on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. I'm Jenny Nyman. Natural fibers have a natural appeal for a lot of folks. They're warm and cozy and still insulate even when wet. But not all fiber is created equal. Fleece from sheep, goats, and even llamas are probably the more familiar options. But a visitor to Kenai earlier this month is hoping people will give alpaca a try.
Well, my name is Wade Geese, and I'm born and raised in Wisconsin. I am a specialist in alpaca worldwide, from the animals all the way to product development, sourcing, and implementation. And I do tons of presentations to help the alpaca community of its awareness. Since alpaca doesn't have its brand yet out there like its friend cashmere, you know, it's kind of that newer wave, you know, natural trendy fiber that people are talking about nowadays.
Geese was up to visit family in Kenai, Ricky Geese and Bunny Swan Geese, and displayed a trunk show of his alpaca products at Bunny's Art Gallery on Beaver Loop Road, Alaskan Artworks. You raise alpaca as well?
Well, I helped start one of the largest and most sustainable farms in all of the Midwest in Wisconsin for about 20 years. So, yes, I've helped raise them, do the vet care, help tons of breeders get started with alpaca to learn about how to care for them and why to raise them and what to do with their fiber afterwards. So I'm not sure if there are many alpaca ranches up here. I'm told that there are one or two in Alaska. I have seen their cousin, the llama, around, so they certainly can be put together. I've seen lots of, I call them, more hobbyist farms that have a menagerie of different types of animals. You know, a few sheep, a few alpacas, a llama or two, and maybe some other animals altogether. And they typically are driven by people that love fiber.
Why alpaca?
Well, alpacas, one, they're so darn cute. They are. Their eyes are big, so they capture your attention there with their gaze. They have fluffy looks like teddy bears, but as soon as you touch them, you just melt. Their fiber feels like clouds look, I say. It's just a very attractive, sensual feel. And that's because, you know, their physical differences of other natural fibers. They aren't a sheep. You know, they're from the camelid family. So with alpaca, since they originated in the upper part of South America that people know today as Peru, Ecuador, Chile, Bolivia, and there's a high tundra plain called the Altiplano that stretches across a little bit of all four of those countries. Most of the alpacas of the world reside in Peru at altitudes anywhere from 10 to 14, even 15,000 feet. So at that altitude, you know, these animals would have perished unless Mother Nature helped tweak them a little bit. And she tweaked them by making a very fine and dense fleece to support that insulation. But what's interesting with scientific studies with other animal fibers of the similar fineness, and that fineness helps give it soft plush feel, that alpaca has little deviated air pockets along the stem or shaft of the fiber. And that, of course, will help with the insulative quality as well. Now, something as fine and luxurious, maybe it's cashmere, you know, is a very soft and fine fleece, but it's solid core, so it doesn't have quite that insulative property. And in comparison to tensile strength tests, which a hair is basically grabbed at each end and pulled apart, and there's a certain test of strength of what that will acquire, and alpaca is one of the strongest of all natural fibers, so that too is helping hold that heat in, be a barrier for the animals and for us when we wear something. So that's also talking about durability than an end product. So versus like cashmere products is very soft and luxurious. Unfortunately, those of us that have had cashmere items, you know, we often find them pilling quite quickly,
right.
Because it's just so fine. It just pills easily and also unfortunately falls apart quite easily too. The alpaca with its durability be much higher, you know, that helps with that protection and durability. So if you have an alpaca item, you better put it in your will. they're durable. And that insulative quality, you can feel within 10 seconds. Come on out, you can grab anything alpaca, grab it in your hand and hold it, and transfer it over into your other hand, and you'll feel the heat build up already. It's amazing. So today I'm wearing my alpaca hat in the sun, so I'm going to have to take it off pretty soon. But I wore it fishing the other day on the Kenai River, which was fantastic, and my alpaca socks, of course. So it's just another natural fiber that I don't see many people know or are aware of its true properties. You know, they know of smart wools, and wool is great. Wool, too, helps hold your heat in, wicks away your moisture. But wools are from sheep. So there are sometimes residual oils, you know, called lanolin. Mm-hmm. And people sometimes are super sensitive to those that are still in that product. Although they do, I'm sure, go through a lot of processing to make a wonderful product. But alpacas are camelids. They don't have oil glands. So it's non-allergenic. So it's another positive trait and property for alpaca. Now, jumping to the other side of raising them, mm-hmm. you know, for those people that might have some sheep or llamas and might want to think about an alpaca or two, I say go for it. They're half the size of llamas typically. They're more timid, or aloof, like a cat.
Oh, okay.
You know, they're not aggressive. Sometimes the cousin, the llama, gets a bad rap. For spitting at people or aggressive. Well, they're larger. They have 4 feet. They can move around a lot easier. They can train you of what they want you to do. And if they don't want you near, then they might do some of those unfortunate techniques. But the alpacas typically do not. They're really easy to train. They certainly can get to know you as a pet, you know, as well. The farm that I was with, we had 4-H groups work with them. We have no fear of small children going in with us in the pens on tours. So we found it throughout the nation to be a very positive and less stressful and less work to have some type of agricultural animal involved, you know, with a family setup.
What kind of care or what kind of environment do they do well in?
Mm-hmm. Great question. The alpacas really just need to be out of the elements. So typically for us, a 3-sided shelter, you know, so they can get in out of the driving snow, obviously. In the winter, we do put down cow mats for a warm rubber layer on the ground so the ground doesn't suck their heat from below. So that's all easy to do. They eat simple grasses. They're a very highly efficient ruminant. So it's not anything super high that we're looking for. Like for cows with milk, they need a high protein hay. Mm-hmm. This, we want a low protein hay, very similar to what horses eat.
Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming if they do well in Wisconsin, they could potentially do well in Alaska?
Absolutely. I've seen alpacas do well even in Florida. So there they do have to have a little bit more of a farm facility with wind and shade, but cyclical climates I think are excellent for these animals. As we shear them in the spring, they need time in the summer to grow, and by the time winter comes around, they have their 3 or 4 sweaters back on them.
What is the process in taking the fleece and turning it into something?
Well, just like any other fiber-bearing animal, think of the sheep, you know, industry. We do shear them, you know, just like that type of animal, or, you know, the cashmere goats get sheared, or anybody else. Then that fiber can be sent off to different mills, you know, in the U.S., and there are what we call small cottage or mini mills that can handle a smaller volume for private people.
Okay.
And turn that into a yarn, or some of them do have ability to make it into an end product.
And do you produce all the things here? You've got socks, you've got plush critters.
Designer capes. Yep, artisan made hand loomed scarves using about 6 different thick and thin yarns. So I am at a point where I am a retailer and also a wholesaler throughout the United States to help support our alpaca industry. But I do all the design work and the production. I find mills that will do the production for me. So I'm the designer and owner of this company. So I don't have the animals anymore. So it's been a really joy to see, you know, from the beginning to the end. And it's important. I think this is where I'm needed because I can help educate people on this end to help spur beginnings, you know, of getting more animals out there and encourage smaller farms and encourage them. Yes, you can do it. Most of the industry is typically 3/4 women because they feel confident that they can handle the animals and the care, where a lot of other livestock, you know, they're shy away from. So it's gravitated towards that side. And I'm seeing a younger trend of people also getting into alpacas because they're quite affordable nowadays. So it's all positive things for the industry.
So why is it that you think cashmere and smart wool and those types of fibers have such popularity and alpaca is not as well known?
Well, cashmere has been marketed a long time, and they have massive herds that now, unfortunately, have devastated landscapes in Mongolia. And there's lots of unfortunate bad press about that. And, well, it is. It's not good. They raise too large a herds for landscapes that can support only 1/4 of them. It was, unfortunately, I think, you know, money-driven and greed, and they're seeing the repercussions of it. But they did an excellent job of marketing. You know, they had millions of dollars and private foundations mm-hmm. that made cashmere and do make cashmere items. And they still sell for very good prices. So, of course, that's going to just encourage that behavior for a while now. Now, alpacas are only a finite number, and most of the production of the yarn is handled out of Peru. So only so many animals, only so much production. You know, this isn't going to flood any world market at any time. So I think it'll always be a little bit more of a specialty, and it'll just be a nice slow increase in our general American culture that they know what alpaca is and the properties of it.
You have managed to luck upon one of the few non-rainy days that we have had around here this summer and this fall. If it were wet today, though, how does alpaca do if it gets damp or if it gets wet?
Oh, great question. Alpaca has a natural ability to shed a bit water repellent from the hair itself, of course. But if, like, an item that we're wearing, like, let's say, for instance, you know, since a lot of people probably fish around here and they have alpaca socks on, mm-hmm. or they're hunters and they have alpaca socks on, alpaca is an excellent, excellent wicking fiber. So because typically the knitwear typically helps wick away with capillary action, your sweat away from your body. But the alpaca, since it's a very cylindrical hair, it has a high evaporation rate. They think it all equates just to wicking. It's really, the secret is the evaporation rate. And the alpaca so then pulls away with whatever the knit item that it's in, and then it helps evaporate it on the outside. So it keeps you comfortable, drier, still warm.
So you can have lighter weight and heavier weight items?
Yeah, absolutely. Heavier weight obviously is going to provide more insulative, you know, protection. So I've got my super thick thermal socks, definitely for the winter and hunting. Everyday kind of socks. I've got therapeutic socks for people maybe with lower circulation down there, for the elderly or just, you know, people with poor circulation. I add a little bit more of a spongy cushion on the bottom. All the socks have extra heel and toe reinforcement. They can be washed on gentle cycle and cold in the washing machine. So try to make that mainstream for today's culture of what we need.
Right. Well, you have some shoppers here, so I don't want to keep you for too long, but where can people get in touch with you?
Well, I'm simple. I'm thealpacaguy.com. So the alpaca guy. You think alpaca? Oh, that alpaca guy. So it's thealpacaguy.com. I encourage people just to call or email if they have a question, just to give them some knowledge. And if they have questions about other fibers that I may know about, I don't know all natural fiber properties, but quite a few, be happy to discuss and share.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Coming up, A walk in the woods can serve as a trip to the grocery store and pharmacy, but you need to know your plants before you pick. We'll find out more after a break. Welcome back to Kenai Garden Talk on 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. I'm Jenny Nyman. When you walk through the woods, what do you see? Pretty flowers? Mystery mushrooms? Tempting berries? Lush but indistinguishable greenery? If you're George Spady, you see meals in the making and treatments for a whole host of ailments. Spady of Soldotna is a medical doctor, herbalist, and natural foods forager. He uses knowledge from all those realms to create the products he sells in Alaska Boreal Herbs. But he likes to teach rather than just prescribe, so he led a wild edible plants walk as part of the Harvest Moon Local Food Festival on August 23rd.
I always tell people, when I have anybody on these hikes, I learn more from you guys than you learn from me, probably, to tell you the truth, because every time I go on one of these hikes, there's lots of questions, and there are a number of questions I don't know the answer to, and I'll face up, I don't know the answer to that. But I will research it later on, so I will find out about that question and answer that later on. So if you have any questions, feel free to holler, interrupt me, whatever, because I'm willing to talk about things as we go.
About 40 adults, kids, and dogs met on Funny River Road and headed out a fire service road just before the Funny River Horse Trail. The area offers a diverse ecosystem with some new-growth forest after recent wildfires and some more established woods.
The burn opened up a lot of that area for different plants to grow in it too, so it's kind of fun to do that, because once you get out of that area right next to the road, about maybe 200 yards or 300 yards in there, it starts to be the burn, and you can see what's there and what's kind of been destroyed and what's been replenished since then. And so it's nice to be able to look at that, and there's different plants in burn areas often. So let's start out. We'll just walk along and I'll pick up some stuff and I'll kind of talk to you a little bit about it.
And we're off. It didn't take long to spot the first plant of interest, common yarrow.
Smell it. It has kind of a smell to it that almost reminds you of bitterness, which when you try it, you'll know why, because it is bitter. So it has this smell that you get out of a lot of plants that have bitterness, and it is used for a number of different things. But its Latin name is Achillea millefolium. The Achillea stands for Achilles, and Achilles, if you don't know who Achilles is, he's an ancient Greek warrior, and he ordered all his soldiers to have this on hand at all times, a bunch of yarrow. Yarrow's really distributed in the kind of the northern climates pretty much all around the world. And the reason why he ordered his soldiers to have this, because it's a phenomenal way to stop bleeding. You stuff it in a wound, the bleeding will almost instantly stop. It's also, if you ingest it, if you take a tincture of it or tea of it, you can also stop bleeding. And not infrequently, women will use it to slow down their period or stop their period for a few days. Okay, we see cottonwood, and I don't know if you know much about cottonwood, but if you pick one of those, smell that.
Oh, yeah.
Smell nice. That's a resin in there that is phenomenal. It not only has a great smell, but just pick one of these little buds. And I harvest these buds in the fall because it's a little more potent, and the leaves are kind of have fallen off, and I harvest them in the spring before the leaves are going to come too. And you'll find that is a resin in there that is very useful for inflammation. So I make a balm out of it. You can make tinctures out of it too, but the problem with tinctures is that resin, if you get a lot of it over a long period of time, it may have some issues and toxicities to it. So I do occasionally use that resin in a tincture, but not very often. But it's a very, very good anti-inflammatory.
Like your swelling?
Arthritis. I use it, the balms, I'll have people put it on to a bite, a sting, some cut, if it's really inflamed. But I'll have people put it on their joint, and it'll get absorbed enough to really be effective at decreasing the pain and the swelling that you see there. So take that, pass it around, smell it. It's Labrador tea.
Smells good.
Does anybody know about Labrador tea and what it's used for? So in the time of the English and the Americans when we were fighting the Revolutionary War, a lot of people use Labrador tea because it's all spread across all of Canada and northern United States. They would use this as a substitute so they wouldn't have to buy and pay the tax that the King of England had imposed on the tea. So this was used in those times. It is very scented. I use it mainly for putting around my buildings, inside my buildings in the fall when the mice are going to come in because they don't like that. And so that's how I use it, is mainly that way. I do have a couple balms, or balms with it. It has a nice scent to it, so it scents the balms. It has a little bit of anti-inflammatory effect, and so it's helpful a little bit that way. And it also has a sedative property to it. So if you ingest it or make a tea out of it, you get a little drowsy and a little sleepy from it. And over time, if you do that, there is some issues with long-term buildup of this lidol that comes out of it that is fairly sedative and can cause some nerve issues related to, they think if you build up too much, you can cause seizures and things like that. People use it all the time. And so it's only if you're going to use it daily, multiple times during the day, long periods of time, would that be an issue. So you can use it in your teas, but just be a little cautious about using it too long. So this is horsetail, equisetum, and it can be used for different things too, but you got to be a little cautious later in the year. It has a buildup of calcium oxalate, and so that can be a little bit toxic. But an interesting story, there was an herbalist that talked to me one time at one of these meetings, and he said, I bought this book in Spanish, and I know Spanish fairly well, and at the end of every recipe, it said, limpia plata, limpia plata. And he said, I can't figure out what limpia plata means. And so he talked to some other people, and suddenly, about 2 or 3 years into this, somebody said, you know what limpia plata is? That is probably the equisetum or horsetail that we use to clean silver. Limpia plata means clean silver, okay? So literally he said, oh yes, I know why, because all the people were malnourished. It was up in the Andes in high elevation. And so he put this into his formulary to give people nutritional value out of what they were eating, because this has a lot of calcium in it. And those people really deficient in calcium up in those areas. And so he put this into his formulary to help his patients out and all. And so if you're deficient in this, you know, in calcium, then probably you absorb as much of that as you need and not having toxicity. And the toxicity isn't really bad with this. It's just that it can cause irritation of the urine and things, because you get these calcium oxalate build up and you can get kidney stones with it. So if you eat lots of this, then it may be an issue.
You eat it?
Well, if you're making tea out of it something, you know, ingesting it, I should say, in some fashion. But you can clean your dishes really nicely with it if you ever go camping. Pull some of this and scrub your dishes with it, because it has that calcium oxalate, and it really is a good scrubbing compound
if you get it in the spring and dry it.
Yeah, if you get it in the spring, it has less buildup of that, and you can eat it and make tea out of it. But,
so you can dry it and save it for tea later.
Right. And it has a lot of, like I said, it has a lot of nutritional value. Besides the calcium oxalate, too, it has a lot of B vitamins, I think, are pretty high in that, too.
George, what did you say this was?
This is a Hybers cranberry or cramp bark.
But what is the medicinal property in it?
Well, as its name implies, cramp bark helps cramps.
Okay.
And that's one of the you don't have a lot of plants that really help cramping very much. And this is one that works in both smooth muscle and skeletal muscle, whereas most things that work for cramps is either a skeletal muscle cramp, meaning your muscles in your legs, or works internally for the smooth muscles, which are around your gut. But this one works for both. And so people use it mostly for, at least what I've had great results is when people have stomach problems and a lot of cramping, or they have PMS, then this will be the lifesaver for them. I mean, really, it is phenomenal. You'll give them some of this, and literally a half hour later, they're cramps disappear and they sit time.
Eat it like that?
You probably can get some of it that way, but the making a tea out of it is the traditional way, is making a tea out of it, or tinctures is where I usually, you know, make a tincture out of it and sell it to them, and that's really rapidly infused and gets in their system pretty quickly.
George, wanted to ask you about the fiddleheads.
Yeah, they don't have a lot of flavor. I usually just would put whatever spice I like, usually garlic. I love garlic. I don't know why, but I love garlic, and I'll put garlic in everything, and it takes everything to taste good. Yeah, salt, pepper, and garlic is usually what I use. Yeah, or you can use butter or olive oil to fry them. And you know, I like them even plain to some degree, but you're right, they don't have much flavor, but they have a great crunch to the fiddlehead. So if you pick them in the spring and all, it's one of the few plants that has a great crunchiness to it. So I usually saute them, and I make stir fry out of them, mix them with some things. I'll mix them sometimes because there's fireweed that's coming up around that time, so I'll put it. I'll usually make a stir fry of fireweed, yarrow, and yarrow is not very bitter, but it has a little spice to it. So I'll use the yarrow to add the spice. So I'll put a little bit of yarrow in there with all my stir fry. And then I have lamb's quarter. And so I like that combination. And then I'll put, you know, the fiddleheads with those, but they're only for about 2 weeks. And most bitter things are healthy in some ways with stomach issues. And in the old days, they used to call them bitters, and they would take those about a half hour before eating to help stimulate the gastrointestinal tract to start secreting stuff so they could digest things more effectively. And it definitely works. And if you have heartburn, you may try bitters a half hour before something that's bitter, a half hour before you eat, because that'll start stimulating the stomach and get your stomach and gut ready to digest things. Whereas if you just eat those, some people, their heartburn is related to them eating it and it's sitting there and not digesting. And then they accumulate all this stuff in there. And by the time their acid gets going, they have this ball of food that the acid can't get to. And so they're filled up with this stuff and they feel uncomfortable and they get the heartburn belching and all that stuff. So it's not uncommon herbalists will use bitter stuff about a half hour before somebody has a meal, and that will help their heartburn tremendously. So something to think about. So anything bitter will work, but there's certain things that they talk about that are more bitter than others. There's a flower around here called a gentian flower that is super, super bitter. But dandelion is somewhat bitter. Yarrow is bitter this time of year, so if you get stuff, you can still eat yarrow and still eat the fireweed, but it's a little bitter.
Emma Hayes was one of the hikers. She's lived on the Kenai Peninsula most of her life, but has never learned much about naturopathic uses of local plants until now.
Well, I've studied naturopathic medicine since 89. So, yeah, I'm really into this kind of stuff. It's my passion. I've never really gotten out and gathered. You know, my parents didn't do that. They had a coal business, and, you know, I mean, I knew about chamomile, and we ate things out in the woods, you know, as kids. There were seven of us. But as far as gathering for making medicinals, no. But now I'm really interested in doing that.
And what did you think of the presentation today?
Fabulous. Absolutely fabulous, because he took time to answer everybody's questions and go in depth instead of just staying surface.
And what are some of the more interesting things that you learned today?
Well, I guess, you know, the things I'm truly interested in is inflammation, you know, and some of the properties that heal that. But I found yarrow to be very interesting.
What are you planning on going out and harvesting next time you're in the woods?
Probably yarrow and arnica. Yeah, and also the high bush cranberry. I like that because I've been having a lot of charley horses. And I've been eating, like, I ate 5 bananas yesterday and I had a little bit of a syndrome of the charley horse, but not actually charley, you know, that bites you.
Spady leads hikes in the fall and offers workshops on making balms and tinctures. To keep up with his schedule of events, check out Alaska Boreal Herbs on Facebook. Now for a look at upcoming food and fiber events in the area. The Kenai Saturday Market, Farmers Fresh Market at the Food Bank, and Wednesday Market at Soldotna Creek Park are done for the season, but the Central Peninsula Farmers Market in Soldotna is open today and September 16th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's on Corral Street in the bus turnaround at Soldotna Elementary School. If you're heading down to Homer tomorrow, there's a workshop on how to grow your own garlic. It's from 2 to 4 p.m. September 10th at Synergy Gardens on Wilderness Lane out East End Road in Homer. The workshop is $30 and a pre-registration is required. Email synergygardens@gmail.com or connect with them on Facebook. The Central Peninsula Garden Club is starting up its monthly programs again. They take a break for the summer, but will meet at 7 p.m. Tuesday, September 12th at a new location, Peninsula Grace Brethren Church on Kalifornsky Beach Road. This month will be roundtables with knowledgeable gardeners who can share their expertise and answer questions. Topics include a season review, fall lawn care, root cellars, landscape planning, seed and bulb selection and storage, prepping high tunnels for winter, winter building projects, winter care for chickens, ugh slugs, and composting. The meetings are free and open to the public. There's refreshments and sometimes door prizes. Annual membership in the Garden Club is $20 for individuals or $30 for a family. You can find more information about all the Garden Club's programs on the website senpengardenclub.org or on the Facebook page. The Kenai Library has a Kombucha 101 class at 1 p.m. September 23rd. Learn to make home-brewed kombucha from green tea and raw unfiltered honey. It's free and pre-registration is not required. And finally, Soldotna Community Schools is starting up its fall and winter classes. Fur sewing is at 6:30 p.m. Tuesdays and Thursdays, September 26th through October 19th. It's $50 for first-time students, $25 for students who have taken the class once before, and free for third-timers. Spinning yarn is at 6 p.m. Tuesdays, October 3rd to October 24th. That one is $125, which covers all supplies and materials. A Dutch oven cooking class is at 6 p.m. Tuesdays, September 26th to October 10th. That's $20 for all 3 weeks. And there's a class on baking and pastry basics at noon Thursdays, November 5th, 12th, and 19th. It's $5 per class. All classes are in the conference rooms at the Soldotna Regional Sports Center, and most require pre-registration. You can get registration forms from the Community Schools page on the City of Soldotna's website. Return completed forms to the sports complex. For more information, call 714-1211. That'll do it for this month's Kenai Garden Talk. You can listen to past episodes on our website, kdll.org, and let us know if you have questions or topics for future shows on the KDLL Facebook page. We'll leave off with a quote from Robert Louis Stevenson: "Don't judge each day by the harvest you reap, but by the seeds that you plant." Tune in next month, October 14th, to Kenai Garden Talk.